Live and in color from the NBC News radio broadcasting studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf Sup radio studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone show this evening.
Hello, pleasant afternoon, and welcome to the Water Zone. I'm Rob Starline with Mr. Chris Davies, and we are the hosts of the show today. And every week, as long as we know, nobody told us any different, so I guess we are. But first, I got to do an apology to everybody, to Chris and everybody else, and to our engineer, because last week we were going to have this interview about sewers and poop, which is kind of fun. But I accidentally sent the wrong file studio, so they played the correct thing that they had, but the incorrect one that I sent. So we'll follow that up in the next couple of weeks. It's a really interesting interview about how they interpret and collect data from all the poop and garbage that's in the sewer systems, and it's pretty unique. And they do this in Vegas, and they also do it in other cities around the world. But it'll be a good thing. It's kind of funny, but we'll enjoy that. So, Mr. Chris, how are you today? How is your week? How's everything going?
I'm great. Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate you asking. The week so far has been, you know, pretty much normal, right? A lot of stuff to do. Appreciate the faux pas there for last week's show. But remember, I did set it up as a pretty crappy show to begin with.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And then when it started going, I go, that's not the right one. And I went and looked on my file, and I sent the wrong one, and that was my mistake, because we had two in there. Actually, that interview was also from Southern Nevada Water, but by a different person, and it's my fault whether I labeled it wrong or whatever. I take the blame for that. So sorry, audience. I did write on the websites and everything else what the real interview was, but we'll make that up, and you'll really enjoy that. It's pretty scientific of what they do, and they can find out a lot of things, and we'll learn all about that. It's pretty good. So, you know, we're still having wildfires in California, and we're still having the drought. And there are also concerns about lingering over the water cutbacks and reversal of Trump-era action, you know, might spell higher power and water costs. And could the infrastructure bill make wildfires worse? There's so much going on in California, as with other places all over the country, But Chris, do you think California can handle this drought that we've got, and if it goes on another year? What's your opinion?
Yeah, so another year, maybe. We really don't have a choice, Rob. But I think the thing that to point out that's important for the listeners is this drought in California is really a north-south issue, right? In the northern part of the state, northern California, Central Valley, and north, that's where really the crux of it is. That's where the real hurt is happening right now. Southern California, for instance, doing pretty well in terms of its water resource and its availability of water. I just read in a couple of different sources, and I know it was in some newspapers as well, Sacramento Bee and some others, that the state is looking at imposing water restriction days again and only allowing, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, and Thursday waterings. I don't know how worse that's going to get. I guess, you know, we all have to stay tuned and see. I don't think that many people in the state are surprised by an announcement like that. I think they're going to be surprised at how this time, I think, the water company is going to respond in their pricing structure. That's where I think the difference is going to be in this drought.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Lake Oroville is reported at 34% of their average, and Folsom Lake is at 35% of average. I mean, that's pretty scary. That's really scary.
Yeah, very scary. I've been to a couple of local water impoundments here in Southern California recently. Lake Paris, for one, which is closest to us, and as you know, very close to our Toro offices in Riverside. And it is, you know, it's a 90%+ pool, so it's quite full. And I know several of the other Southern California lakes are as well. So, you know, are we expecting to see additional conservation measures put into place? I think so. Are we expecting to see, again, just in Southern California here, firm water restrictions go into place this year? I don't think so. Next year, we'll have to wait and see what the winter season brings.
Well, you know, in Merced County, where there's a lot of farmers, the state decision to cut river water to local farmers, there's over 2,000 farmers there, and they're looking at cutting water off for that. So that's going to hurt ag big time in California. So, you know, if there is water available, you know, if they stop giving it to the farmers, economics is going to hurt, food's going to hurt. I mean, it's going to be not a nice situation going.
No, I agree with that. For some of the farmers, the alternative of continued groundwater pumping is a big issue, given all the subsidence issues and stuff that's been, documented in the past 4, 5, 6 years, maybe even. I don't know that the farmers are going to suffer this year because, you know, based on your question, you know, can we handle it another year? But I'll tell you, if next year is a similarly dry year and we don't get any restoration at all of the water impoundments in central and northern California, then I think it's going to be a tough struggle.
Yeah, I know a lot of the major water agencies and wholesalers say they have water for 3 to 4 years saved up.
Yep.
Hopefully that's true. That'll help. But I agree with you that I believe they're going to have to be a price increase to help curtail the use of water. I really, you know, people here are blessed. We're all blessed about what we pay for water. You go to other countries like Israel and other places that you pay a much higher price of water. And it's a whole different mindset of all the people, even down to the children, elementary school children, about water and what you do with it and how you use it. That's a whole big social consciousness program that probably needs to happen. You know, I think this country is getting much smarter on how to manage water better. That I think technology is going to help boost a lot of savings. But I also want to see some more rebates going to farmers and technology is going to the ag side, because there's a lot of money and water that can be saved in agriculture, more than it can in a single home residence. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, a wholesale change of water, of residential water habits is influential to the available water that would be left over. However, you know, it's not going to happen in 1 year. Getting back to the crux of the question, how can we win this war for another year, or can we win this war for another year? You know, whether or not you agree or our listeners agree, water in California is a subsidized product, whether it's, government funded or some other way. And it's been a subsidized product for many, many years. And it is, too, I think, where you are in Phoenix.
Yeah.
The cow's got to come home at some time, and the reckoning is going to happen. So.
Just starting here in Arizona, but I mean, it's affecting here, it's affecting Colorado, you know, all of the Southwest is feeling this. And, we've had, they said rain every single night. I haven't seen much, maybe in the east portion of Phoenix, it's coming down real hard. We don't seem to get much here. We get sprinkles, maybe since I've been in the last couple of months, I think we only had 2 days that poured pretty heavy. Other than that, it sprinkles, thunderstorms, lots of thunderstorms and dark clouds, but lightning, but not a lot of rain. And I know, you know, you talk to the HOAs and things like that. They're out now hiring. You and I were having a conversation offline about water management.
Yeah.
And their people think that's a good thing to have, and they want to pay for it. But you know what? I only see people like HOAs and big commercial properties that are going to start looking at that, because they're going to get it's not the word taxed here, but they're going to pay a big water bill as soon as they start raising the rates and start going into the tiered rate systems as they do in California.
Yeah, I think that's the belt buckle tightening that most of us are waiting to see happen, not just on the you and I as residents, but also on the commercial side too. Municipalities, parks and rec, public agencies, schools, universities, hospitals, all are going to be affected by that. But I'll tell you what, Rob, I mean, if you look at the current market and the jobs that are happening, there certainly is no visibility right now, no slowdown in jobs or projects. I don't know that message has reached the consumer yet, right? I mean, they're looking for us to come out of this drought just as we have in all the other droughts. And the question is really, is this a 1 year drought, 2 year drought, 5 year drought? How long is it going to be painful?
Yeah, it's scary. And you talked about jobs and such. You're right. There's not a slowdown for that. There's a great demand. And even as you and I were talking the other day, even in the water industry, there's lots of jobs. They're looking for people to do analytics. They're looking for water management. They're looking for people to go out and do field estimates and all kinds of things like that. There is plenty of jobs in the water industry. You know, I was out talking to one of my oldest sons. He's a plumber. And I said, why don't you get certified to do backflow valves? I mean, how many backflow valves are there in the United States? Gazillions of them. I mean, it's great money doing those jobs, or water operators and things of that. There's so many jobs in the water industry that people really even don't know what exists in that world. It's kind of been hidden for a long time. All they see is the customer service people and the management talking about raising rates and conserving water, but they don't know the workings of it. Even when we had the droughts before, people don't understand. We don't shut down, or the water agencies don't shut down their processing plants, their water treatment plants. They have to run 24 hours a day. It takes people. You can't just cut your staff and then what? You get bad water? I mean, that's not going to happen. So.
No, you're right. It's 24. It's 24/7, 365. On the issue there with the backflow stuff, we can ask our next guest, our second half guest, that very question.
Yep. He's very well educated in that area and very knowledgeable. And I'll tell you, we got some questions that came in for Kathy Kellogg, who's the chairwoman of Kellogg's Garden Products. And we like to play them and her responses to our listeners to that. So let's go to that for a minute and see what she has to say and what our listeners are asking. So, what's the scoop on soil?
All from across the country to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, we have a question that's sent in by Sam, and he asks, is the material found on the ocean floor considered soil?
I love that Sam asked this question because I had to do a little research. And it turns out the ocean floor is composed of three different types of soil. They're known as pelagic sediments or marine sediments. That they have the three different types include calcareous, red clay, and siliceous. So yeah, I even had to have a pronunciation lesson to figure this out. But what is important about the ocean floor is that it does sustain life. It mostly is made up of something called ooze, and anything that's over 30% organic matter is called ooze, and 48% of the ocean floor is ooze, and that's made of once formerly living organisms like pteropods and other tiny organisms that live in the sea like plankton. And it's interesting to me that the ocean floor has a 30% organic matter that, and 48% of the ocean floor is this ooze. We on Earth or on land, us land creatures are striving to just get 3 to 5% organic matter in our soils, and often less than 0.5% of organic matter on the face of the Earth, just less than 0.5% of organic matter is normal. So the ocean kind of has us beat when it comes to being largely made up of organic material. And I know a lot of people are considering ocean floor mining. Deep ocean mining is being considered all over the world because no one owns the ocean. No one owns the ocean floor. There may be riches buried in it. So there's kind of an international fight over the ocean floor. But I want to throw some caution and invite everyone to look up for themselves, Google that deep sea floor mining, as it's an ecosystem, even at the depths of the ocean, and we don't quite understand its impact on the climate and the impact on the entire hierarchical ecosystem of the ocean. So yes, there is soil on the bottom of the ocean, and Sam, if you hadn't asked that, I wouldn't know that. And two, let's do our best to preserve that beautiful ecosystem that keeps us all breathing, which is the ocean.
Wow, what a great question from Sam and a great answer from you, Kathy. Now I can use the word ooze in a sentence and sound smart about it.
I'm eager for you, Chris, to use the word silicious.
I'm going to have to look that one up in my Funk and Wagnalls, I think.
Yes.
For those old folks, that's a name for an old dictionary. All right. Our next question comes all the way from Beaverton, Oregon. It's from a young lady by the name of Debbie. It's sort of a geologic question as well. Debbie asks, how can someone determine the age of soil?
I also had to do some research to understand her question, and here's what I found. So aging of soil really largely depends on what do you want to do with that information once you know how old your soil is. So like if you're planning on normally the water zone, I'm thinking people are wanting to know about their soil because they want to know what they can plant in their soil. And if you're trying to find out the age of a fossil, then you're going to take a different tack at trying to age your soil. But if you're trying to see how quickly your mountain might erode, well, then you're going to do a whole different research project into how the soil is developing, and that's called pedogenesis. There are three very technical answers to this question. There's a lichen growth curve. Scientists from all over the world actually examine lichen and determine the age of soil based upon what they find when they study the lichen. Second, you've all probably heard of the carbon dating method. This, again, is if you're trying to find out the age of a fossil, you would be able to use the carbon dating method. And then the Soil Science Society of America has done a lot of research. The International Science Society in Germany and Switzerland have also determined how to radioactively determine the age. One thing I found interesting is the age of the soil, that soil cannot be any younger than the oldest tree growing in it. So I thought that was a very interesting way to listen and hear about the age of soil. And then at Kellogg, which we do so often, there really is no bearing on whether or not you can grow things in it. And you can always improve soil at any age and in any texture and in any condition by the addition of organic materials and improvement on the drainage and the texture and the chemistry of soil. So I'm hoping that that answers Sam's, no, it's not Sam's question, Debbie's question.
The technical questions come in. They're getting really high-tech questions, you know?
You know, every time that we get these questions from the listeners, it just amazes me at how well versed some of our listeners are, and they ask great questions, right? So we've got to do more of these segments. We know they're popular. We know that our listeners like to listen in and ask questions, and this gives them the opportunity just to do that.
So you know, I was going to say for the listeners, they can go on YouTube and look up Kathy Kellogg Johnson and look for her TED Talks on the subject. It's really, really good. I mean, I know she's not a teacher, but I mean, she's a great instructor on the information, and it's great. And just so you know, I guess we didn't announce that our best friend, Chris Austin, is off today. She's actually having dinner with one of her friends who were more important than we are, I guess, at this time. No, just kidding. She doesn't get to do that. She deserves that. I know she's preparing to move in the next month or two, so she's been hassling to get her house ready and you know, to move out of that and get the new one going and all that. So we wish her well. I hope she has a great dinner with her friend from, I guess it's a friend from her high school, time she hasn't seen in years. So I hope she has a wonderful night. She deserves that, and we sure miss her all the time. But we do read her stuff every single day. And as I always say to our listeners, please go to mavensnotebook.com, become a subscriber, become a sponsor. It's the greatest place in the world to get water news. And a lot of the people who read that are some of the callers and people who send us messages about questions. So we thank them very much. Well, we got a special guest now joining the show. And Chris, I'll let you introduce him since you know him a little bit longer than I do.
A little bit longer might be an underrated version of that description. Our next guest has been on before. His name is Richard Daigle, and he's the president, CEO, chief cook, and bottle washer for Irrigator Technical Training School based here in Southern California, Ontario, California. Richard's been on the show before and done a couple of training sessions for CEU units for our listeners, and we're certainly going to have him back to do more of those in the future. But tonight, we have Richard on as sort of a special guest to talk about what's been happening in his part of the, the training and education part of the industry and for his other businesses over the course of the pandemic, and just to get some insight from Richard on how he's adapted to that, not just for the school, but for his other businesses as well. Richard's been in the industry for umpteen million years. I mean, I think, you know, he was born with a shovel in his hand. This has been his career forever. I've known him for a long time, a first-class gentleman. I'm very happy to welcome Richard Daigle back to the Water Zone. Richard, how are you tonight?
Good. Good to hear your voice. And Rob?
Yes, sir. We're glad to have you.
Awesome.
Well, I tell you, go ahead, Richard. If you're going to make a comment, go ahead.
No, great. And I was just listening to you guys talking, and it's just awesome to listen to everybody and hear different opinions of different stuff and different speakers.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, we try to get pretty well diversified on the show. We have a lot of different guests, and, you know, we've been doing this now. This is year six here coming up in this
month.
Wow. So we've got 5 full years behind us. The first two were done by a guest we just had on, and the former co-host Mike Barron with Rob Starr, and then I took over the microphone 4 years ago, 4 and some change years ago, and we've kept the show going, and it's a ton of fun, and we have no plans to quit. And I say we because I mean me and Rob Starr. So unless you're telling me I should be saying me and the turtle in my pocket, Rob, maybe you should chime in.
Well, I got to tell Richard, the people who are on pretty much now frequently on the show, which is Chris and myself, Ms. Chris Austin and Ms. Kathy Kellogg, we're all inductees of the Green Industry Hall of Fame. So we're very proud of that. And you're part of that and you're part of that organization as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an inductee. They put me in. Can you believe that?
How much did it cost? No, just kidding.
Yeah.
No, we're very proud of that. And maybe real quick here, maybe you want to just talk a little about that before we get into some heavy duty questions. But tell us a little about what's happening this year with the Green Industry Hall of Fame.
Last year we did it, and Chris was inducted, and we did it at the Sherman Garden, and it turned out really good. And then Kellogg Health, Kathy got inducted. I mean, we didn't have like a big crowd. We just had it filmed, and from Nick from Green Things, and it was on PBS. So you can always go to PBS and look, and it's always running like every couple months. You know, times a year, and it shows Chris and Kathy and everybody getting inducted, and tells a really good story about the organization. And we've been doing.
It was because I was inducted, it was a different experience, right? But we did all the things we normally do. We didn't really have the introduction speeches or the roasting speeches, if you will, that are sometimes, a big part of it and kind of fun, where a couple of that of the inductees' colleagues get up there and kind of do, you know, a little roast and do some fun making of that person. Not that I did that for Rob at all. Ha ha. when he was inducted. But I think that was the only thing really that was different to me anyway. Everything else was, you know, was good. It was different with masks and plexiglass shields during the interviews and stuff like that. But it went off smoothly, wouldn't you agree, Richard?
Yeah. And the only other thing, we didn't do a sit down dinner. We had it where we had some, just maybe 25 of us, and Margo, which is on the board, brought her RV, and we all had snacks and little sandwiches and chips and cookies and stuff, and all gave everybody a high five, but we all stayed really safe. And then like a month later, it aired on PBS. So I thought it was really good, and I think that's nice that it's on live TV. And we're going to be doing that again this year. We're going to do a little bit of We're going to have a dinner for like 60 people. So first come, first serve. And it's at Sherman Gardens again. And then we're going to have PBS with Nick from Green Things. He comes out. He's got that big, long beard, and he interviews everybody. And I think it will be another great event. And then we're just going to wait until everything completely gets lifted before we do our, you know, 400 to 500 people coming to dinner.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Hey, we're going to get into some questions here about your school and the industry and stuff, but we got to take a commercial break, so stick around. Don't go away. And for our listeners, we're just going to go to our commercial break for a minute or two. We'll be right back, and we'll continue the in-depth discussion we're going to have with our friend Richard. So stand by. We'll be right back.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
Are you presently part of the irrigation industry as a worker or business owner? Do you want to learn how you and your staff can boost your knowledge and productivity? Then you should check out Irrigator Technical Training School. Irrigator Tech is the leading source of quality instruction serving all facets of the irrigation industry. Their courses provide a basic, easy-to-understand approach that raises the skill level, competency, and professionalism of landscape and irrigation personnel through practical education and services. Irrigator Tech combines classroom and real-life hands-on training, leading to a well-recognized certification that both customers and employers demand. Irrigator Tech's specialized courses can help you quickly become a certified irrigation auditor or a certified installer, repair, maintenance, or backflow technician. Courses also include certificates in smart water application or becoming a certified tree worker. Most importantly, all certifications are state recognized, and Irrigator Tech offers annual renewal classes to help keep your certification up to date. So whether you work in California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, or Arizona, there's an Irrigator Tech class near you. For more information on how to jumpstart your career, call Irrigator Tech toll-free 866-614-1755 or visit them on the web at irrigatortech.com. That's toll-free 866-614-1755 and on the web at irrigatortech.com.
They love you. They love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aw.
This is KCAA.
Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone with Rob. Hope everybody's having a great afternoon. So, Richard, they just played a commercial of yours on the air, and you have a great school, and you do a great job. Tell me, how did the pandemic affect that at all? Had more businesses decided to send their people to school to learn more during that downtime, or what? What happened?
Well, one, Chris, you sound awesome doing that commercial. I don't know how you ever got into irrigation. You guys sound unbelievable. So I just want to let you know that. And
we have faces for radio.
Yeah. The pandemic pretty much just dead stopped Irrigator Tech. The only thing we had is our membership, and people, our members, were very loyal and just kept on paying their membership, which helped, and that kept us alive. And by being a member, they get special discounts from lots of different people, so they still got their discounts and everything. They can come back to any class during that year unlimited. So if they take a class and they go, wow, 3 months later, now I have more questions, they don't have to pay again. They just come again, and then the next year they just pay their $100 membership. But we're pretty conservative on, you know, we've been able to save and keep our stuff, our width. I have a very low overhead, so I was able to overcome it. But, man, it was something. I mean, it was like, hello, 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 there's nobody in the room. So we were able to develop our classes better, rewrite stuff, just, you know, all things when you're busy that you couldn't really detail. And you say, hey, man, I always wanted to change these questions and things like that and upgrade the building. And but, I mean, as money came coming in, it was just the association that kept it going. And then our organization owns basic irrigation parts. So we don't sell pipe or PVC fittings, just hard-to-find parts. So if they're looking for a Toro part and it's 40 years old and they go, wow, you know, nobody has these, go to basic irrigation parts and they'll find it. All troubleshooting stuff, and it's just, you know, your typical glue and pipe and fittings you can get at any distributor, but we have all the odd parts. So that really picked up. Just like Amazon, and people just didn't want to go out. So, I mean, Home Depot, Lowe's, you couldn't even get in the parking lot. Well, online, we had basic parts from doing 10 to 15 orders a day at best. We're 80, 90 orders now. So it really did change, and that helped us go, too.
Do you think the... I'll use the word landscape of contractors, landscape and irrigation contractors.
Do you see a better move towards hiring more educated people than just basic labor?
Well, I think so. I mean, it just seems like a lot of people moved all over the place. I mean, some people with their certifications, as soon as they leave a job, a company, so-and-so landscape, and they'll call us and say, can you upgrade me? I'm now at so-and-so landscape or the city or the school. I mean, there was a lot of movement last year because I think people were just didn't want to spend any time educating their people, and then they were trying to squeeze every penny out of their company, and I don't think a lot of people were paying people very well. They were just going, I'm sorry, you got to take a cut and pay if you want to stay here. And some people said, hey, my style of life of living is not at, you know, $10.95 an hour. I'm used to making $18, you know, so it's going to be a hard hit. I don't want to leave, but if that's what you're going to do, I won't be able to make it. So I got to look. And that's what people did.
Yeah. Of the smaller contractors, not the big gigantic companies, but out of the small ones, what percentage would you estimate got hit and went out of business?
Oh, I don't think there's all the small little gardeners that go do consumer houses.
Uh-huh.
I think people cut back to saying every other week, and most of that business stayed with them, and they did extras. So because people were getting money, and they were saying, oh, well, now here, do this and do that. And so they were really stretching themselves, and little gardening companies were dipping into other parts and doing more tree trimming, more fertilizing, because these people would be getting that money, that stimulus money. And so they would say, okay, I'm going to fix up the house. I'm going to put a barbecue in. I'm going to do this, you know. So that did help a lot. It's just some people hoarded it, and other people just said, you know what, I've always wanted to fix that fence. Let's fix it.
Yeah.
And they went to the gardener. And then the gardener, I mean, it's still the people that do consumer houses for $65, $75, even $100 a month, those guys are just, they're not licensed, which doesn't mean they're bad. They just are, they got themselves 100 houses, you know, at $85 a month, and that's fine. They don't want to be big. They don't want to do construction, you know, so they'll call me and say, hey, they want all the sprinklers put in. And I'm not capable of doing that. Plus, my route keeps me very consistent. If I'm not moving every, you know, hour or half an hour between jobs, I don't have time to put in this. Who do you recommend? And then I'll get them a licensed contractor that knows how to do it, and they'll just put it in. And sometimes they'll say, "Oh, thanks for the referral. Great. Here's $100 or a dinner card." You know, and then that person doesn't change their momentum of what they're doing. So I saw a lot of that happening, a lot of people networking with other people.
Do you think any of the public stuff? Yeah, I agree, Richard. Do you think that the public or, you know, the customers, the residential customers suffered as a result of that? I mean, not having a licensed, trained, or certified person doing that job. I'm only asking this question because from a very very close situational standpoint, one of my neighbors here did the same thing. Just had a, you know, his mow and blow guy kind of do some irrigation work for him, and you know, kill some grass and put some native plants in. And he, this mow and blow guy, I don't know them, but didn't do a very good job. Richard did an awful job, even on the sprinklers.
Right.
It was just terrible. And of course the guy, this person knows who I am and what I do. And so I went over there and I said, man, you got ripped off. You know, have you seen that happening as well?
Well, yes, because, you know, even people that amaze me that send 7-8 people, big landscape companies, they're starving for irrigation people. So they take them off the mowing crew. And then they come in, and I say, how long you've been an irrigation guy? Well, they threw me in, and it's been 4 months. Well, what do you think? And then it's like I'm speaking German or something, or Swiss. I mean, they're going, I don't even know what you're talking about. So what do? I just rip the heads out, rip valves out, and just, you know, tear out. There could be awesome Ringmaster clocks, you know, several thousand each. And they'll rip them out because they don't understand them. And they convince people that, hey, go with this clock. And they'll just get some little $80 clock. And the homeowner gets ripped off because they had, or that commercial building has a really nice clock in it because that little gardener that they went down to doesn't understand it. He'll just tell them, oh, that's not good stuff. And he just lies to them. Because I'll get people calling me and say, I got cow fence in, and they say, how old's the clock? And they'll take me pictures, and they'll say, I go, what are you doing? We're ripping them all out. I said, well, what are you going to put in? We're just going to put a little residential clock. And I go, well, that's not even apples to apples. Do you understand what you have? Yeah, but my gardener doesn't understand it, so he ripped it out. I said, yeah. No. Shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. You know, you're going to, somebody spent a lot of money. And that's what happens. You hire uneducated people and they can't figure the heads out. They can't figure the spacing. And I look at it and I've been doing classes on Saturdays all the time and then during the week and I'm all, well, don't you ever figure this and this? I'm not going to say exactly, but I mean this and that. No, I've never heard of that. How many heads are on the line? Well, there were 12, and now I got 18. Well, did you downsize the nozzle? No. What does that mean? So it is amazing that what happens in water management, it seemed like it all went out the door. We were all saving water or trying to. Then all of a sudden, you get all these lack of educated people, and they'll go in and they'll say, just down the street, we have a shopping center, and I knew the pretty good size maintenance company, and they did a great job. They dumped them and went with some little no name. They don't even have anything. I go, what's the name? I don't know. I mean, no. And I'm all, so now everything's pretty much dead, and it's ugly. And then they just blame it on the pandemic. They just say, oh, well, it's the pandemic. No, it isn't. I mean, some of these places are just playing it. That's a beautiful hundreds of thousands of dollars in landscape, and now because you're going to blame the pandemic, let's just get rid of the gardener, let's just get rid of the plumber, you know. So I think that it's harmful for people to overreact like that. So I think definitely it changed. The residential wasn't as bad, but the residential for having subbing work to people that weren't qualified, yes, that was real bad.
Well, you know, most people really don't understand there's really a science behind irrigation. You know, you can talk about friction loss. You can talk about uniformity distribution. I mean, these are words that most people don't know. They really don't.
Oh, absolutely.
And most mow and blow guys don't understand all of that. You know, I've seen one put in a drip line, and they put a quarter-inch line in, and they were running hundreds of feet. Well, you really can't do it that long. You know, it's too long a run. Or they put in a standard half-inch line, and you know, and maybe it's 12 or 18-inch spacing, and then the owner says, oh, I want to put a plant here, so I need another emitter. So go ahead and punch a hole in the hose and add another emitter to it. But that changes everything. They don't understand that. Or how to water or any of these things. I mean, the terms, it's a whole science. Hydraulics is a whole science behind it, and not understanding it, homeowners and even commercial property people, they get screwed all the time when they'll come up, oh, your valve is bad. You need a new valve. Well, questions I ask, okay, what's wrong with the valve? Oh, it's leaking. Okay, is it the diaphragm has dirt or a rock underneath it? Is the solenoid good? Is it a crack? There's only a few things that could go wrong that would cause that. But the owners or the property manager don't understand any of that. And they say, oh, okay, just go ahead and change it. And then they get a bill for $200 to change the valve out when all it was is a little diaphragm that was had some dirt under it.
Oh, I get people calling basic parts every day from the East Coast and Canada. And they'll say, they don't want to make this. I said, I still have the
how many you need? Well, the landscaper said I needed to rip out the whole manifold. And I said, well, what was he going to charge you for that? And he'll say $3,000, $4,000. I said, well, you can just buy that solenoid and that diaphragm, and you got six stations, and you the body and the bonnet's not going to have a problem. If you just replace both of those, you'll be under $20 a valve. I mean, you'll be able to do it yourself. Just sit down, put a white towel down, unscrew things, set them to the side, re-put the diaphragm and the solenoid. You'll be great and save yourself thousands.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, same how consumers, and yes, Home Depot and Lowe's are around, but they're people. I mean, they hope you know what you're doing. There's nobody there saying helping you that deeply.
They don't even tell the customers if you're going to change a nozzle or anything else, stay with the same brand that you've been using. Don't swap it, because even though they all say, everybody says we're equal to, it's not exact to that. So you want to do that. Do you believe, like in Texas, you have to become a licensed irrigator? Do you think California should go that route?
Oh, I thought they should have done that 10, 15 years ago. But I think the one with the powers, the CLCA, I was the president for 7 years. And it seems like they just want to protect their members. They should have lobbied and said, we need to have an irrigation in this and have a smaller license than a C-27. Then have some kind of gardener license and some kind of irrigation license, and then being able to help the smaller people. Because not everybody, these guys, I mean, some of them have a hard time with English. So them getting a license is real tough, but they're very, very intelligent. I mean, because they're taking it in when I'm teaching a class. If I'm speaking, they're taking my English, converting it in their head into Spanish, and they do it. Now, we still have ALLPRO, which is the Association of Latino Landscape Professionals. They can go to that website, and all the videos, everything is in Spanish, and all of our books are in Spanish. I mean, I have four other instructors that teach Spanish. I try, but I just never feel I sound that intelligent. I know when they're talking about me, but I don't know how to, because everybody gets so excited and they just start talking. I'm all, slow it down. I'm not that good.
Yeah.
But the Latino market is very intelligent. They work their tails off, and they're a great labor force. And I think that has ALLPRO for us expanded during the pandemic. Because a lot of people laid them off, and people said, well, I'll just go start my own company. And I'm different than the CLCA. They want you to be a C-27, which is great. But if you're not going to be one and you can't be one, I still think people, I just wrap my arm around them and say, hey, at this point, I'm just going to teach you everything so you're the best that you can be. And then when you feel better and you learn and you feel confident, then get your contractor's license. But I don't push people away, you know. Doesn't matter to me. They can be taught. I still want them to save water and be good in the environment. I mean, I go to movie stars' houses, and they got people doing their maintenance, paying them $30,000-$40,000 a month, and they don't have contractor's licenses, but they're like artists. They're very good with the Japanese gardens, and they're very good with doing stuff. So, you know, just because you have a license doesn't mean that you're better than anybody else. There's lots of, you know, because every employee doesn't have a license. If you're in Texas and you're an irrigation person and you've got 20 irrigators, all 20 of them have to have that license. But here, they have a contractor's license. There's just one guy. He could be inside the office counting his money and making sure he's getting paid. And the labor force doesn't have any licenses. Yeah. They're just guys working under his license. So sometimes that backfires. I mean, it does amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really stretch themselves. I've got people that now are coming to classes that are sweep cleaning. They clean the parking lot. Now they're just doing the landscaping. So different, like the MetroLink. There was a company that cleaned and pressure washed everything. Now they're doing all the gardening. They bid on it and got it. I mean, yeah. Then they're saying people, because they don't know anything. I mean, it amazes me. And they said, well, they like us and they like our personality. I said, well, you got to learn all this stuff. So,
yeah,
it does.
Well, Richard, you know, I mean, sure, it's for sure been a you know, a tough time in the past 18 months, 2 years, maybe even a troubling time at some of the stages. But, you know, kind of taking a little forward view, if you will, what's it look like for you? I mean, I follow you and your Gator Tech, and I'm on your email blast and all that stuff. So I see you're starting to publish the class schedules again. Are you kind of getting back into the groove?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look, it's kind of funny. My wife, Marcy, says, oh, my God, we're 13,000% up from last year. And I said, well, we didn't do anything last year. And, you know, she thinks, oh, wow, we're rich. And I said, well, when you had zero people come and all of a sudden now you got 10 people, we're up. So this year in January, people really loosened up and started coming. Not to full force, but at least 2 to 3 days a week, we have 8 to 10 people. So, I mean, I'm very well encouraged that going, thank you. Thank God if people are coming back and loosening up.
Real quick, what are some of the, with a few minutes left here, we got, what's some of the most interesting issues that you encountered on properties or some of your students ask you?
Oh, I mean, most of them, it's amazing because we think how some people that do these big jobs know irrigation, they don't know certain valves, they don't know how to adjust the head. And then you got other people that just learn themselves and trial and error. I mean, I've had people walk in this year, and the guy signed up for a backflow class, and in the back of the truck, he had 20 backflows. And I go, what are you doing with those? And he goes, I brought them so you could certify them. I go, I can't certify them in the class. You got to go put them back in. He goes, he just cut the PVC and made a big U over the top of it on 20 valves. I go, no. It has to be 10. Then you come back. So it is surprising. And, I mean, he had commercial jobs. And I was all, wow. I go, well, they still have the water. It's no big deal. I go, yes, it is. So, I mean, it just depends on that person's mentality. I mean, really big on, I mean, I've got this guy, Ivan, that just did the class. He got 100%. And his brothers have all taken the class. But it's got to be their parent. I go, your mom and dad did an awesome job. So it's really the character and how people feel inside. So it's, do they have work ethic? It's hard to find that work ethic anymore. But you just keep on working, and then you lead by example. And their company's growing, and they're doing well because the four brothers, it was the dad's company. Now he retired and gave it to them. So it's whatever you've learned in life. If you've got good parents, you know, and you got good ethics, and kids learn from, like Chris's kids, you know, they learn from Chris. And that's all the crazy stuff. But Janet's wife is really great for the outfit.
Hey, we got about a minute left here, Richard, so tell people where they can get in touch with Irrigator Tech, Bates and Park, whatever. Give you a website and phone.
Yep. So if you want to, we do consumer classes. If they want to take them, they're only $25 each. If you go to irrigatortech.com, if you have parts that you can't find at your local, then go to basicparts.com. If you want to learn anything on YouTube, we have over 1,000 videos on green industry news, from trimming your rose bushes to doing everything. And then, of course, if you are Spanish, go to allpro.org, and that's the association. All the videos are in Spanish, so there's no reason you can't learn just because you have a hard time.
Good. Well, thanks, Richard, for joining us. We appreciate that, and our listeners will certainly enjoyed what you said. We wish you well, and see you shortly.
What I told you that in time.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.